I turn and step by step. Inch by inch.
No, please, no.
I step by step. And I knock.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua, Three Men and a Microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Honey, how many times do I have to move your old army bag? It's taking up too much room in the closet.
It's a duffel bag. It's full of my old uniforms.
And are you going to wear them again?
Yeah, maybe. Someday.
Uh-huh. And what size do you wear now?
Whatever.
Honey, why don't you take them to Military Mike's? You're certainly there enough.
It's Iron Mike's, and at least he doesn't make comments about my weight.
Bring your old military gear down to Iron Mike's Military Exchange. They'll turn your old uniforms, gear, and military collectibles into cash. So if you drug it back from overseas and it doesn't fit your motif, we want it. Iron Mike's wants your Class A's, Alphas, Hammies, Fatigues, Utilities, Digis. We want your Deuce gear, Molly gear, Alice gear, Web gear. Bring in your Poly Pros, new boots, used boots. Heck, if it's green, camouflaged, or digital, we want it. Give it a good home, used, pre-enjoyed. Iron Mike's has a bin for it. Iron Mike's buys, sells, and trades. Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out all their newly acquired items at militaryexchange.co.
Springtime weather forecast. Rainy, gray skies with a slight chill in the AM. Tactical to practical. Military rain gear on sale now at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Camouflage rubber rain pants, USGI issue, only $19.99. Good morning. Welcome to Civil War Radio. This is Corporal Tim Thornton. I'm here today with Armin Marinetti, Melissa J. Walker, and Kevin Henderson, running for Ontario County Sheriff. How are you, sir?
Good.
Welcome to the show, and we feel free to talk about anything you want to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come in, and we're here to answer any questions, or obviously, as you stated, I have announced my candidacy to become a candidate for Ontario County Sheriff, and I look forward to the campaign and meeting all the great people in the county and telling them my qualifications and my history at the Sheriff's Office. So I appreciate the opportunity.
That's right. Now, you've been a longtime resident of Ontario County. You've served for a long time.
Yeah, I have. I was born and raised here. I actually born here in Canandaigua. And I've lived here my whole life. I became a deputy with the Sheriff's Office back in 1984 and have been with the Sheriff's Office ever since.
Now, that was a direct request that you joined the Sheriff's Office.
At the time, the Sheriff then was Gary Stewart, and Gary was good friends with my parents and knew that I wanted to become a deputy. And my father at the time was a New York State Trooper with Troop B, a zone lieutenant. And one day I get a phone call from the sheriff saying he wanted to talk to me and offered me a part-time job at the time to get started. And I agreed, and I began my career on May 26, 1984.
Oh, that's almost...
I'll be starting my 34th year here pretty soon.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, and I've had many opportunities at the sheriff's office, and Currently, I'm still with the Sheriff's Office, as I stated. I'm a part-time deputy again. I retired full-time in 08, and I am currently a school resource officer for the Shortsville-Manchester School District.
Very good. So as sheriff, head sheriff, is that what they call it?
Well, the sheriff.
The sheriff.
He or she is the chief law enforcement officer of the county.
I like that. Yeah, that brings up a lot of like Civil War radio stuff, sovereign citizen. They just had a story about a sovereign citizen in the news.
Okay.
I didn't really get a chance to read it. But not that you're one and I'm not one. Tell us about how you feel about, like, if you took over, the management style.
Well, I would be a visible sheriff. I would lead from the front. I would be visible in a uniform. I would be out in the community talking with those that live in the community. I would make sure that I'm available for the concerns that the community has. It could be anything from traffic to crime in their neighborhood to drugs that we're experiencing. Right now, obviously, we're in that terrible epidemic of the opioid crisis. Again, I've been very focused on that. I sit on the Partnership for Ontario County. I'm on the Substance Abuse Coalition. I've been with that since we started it in the inception, realizing that we have a problem. And currently, I'm also one of the Ontario County coroners. I'm in my second term as a coroner. This is my eighth year, so I've experienced that as well.
Going back to management, Kevin, would you do anything different? Would you address the men or the prison guards, prison officers, POs? Would you do anything different with the management, with the, I don't know, do you guys have a union? Anything in those lines?
Well, yeah, we do have a union. There's different divisions within the Sheriff's Office. The Road Patrol has their own PBA. It's called the Ontario County Police Benevolent Association. The Jail Division, Corrections Division has their union. So, yeah, I would work with the unions. I'm actually, ironically, in the union right now with the Road Patrol Unit. And, yeah, I would work with the union. It's important that management and union are able to discuss issues, come up with resolutions that both parties can agree to. Yes, and I think it's important that the sheriff and Phil Pavro, obviously he's in his 28th year as sheriff, has done a good job. I think it's important that we keep the relationship, have a little bit more visibility with the members, and reaching out to them and making sure they understand that the sheriff is there to be there for them and listen to their concerns.
That's good. What about the level of training for your men?
Well, with technology, we were talking earlier, technology changes with law enforcement every day as much as it does with us just in our everyday lives. We need to make sure that we're aware of the technology that would be an asset to us as law enforcement officers. Obviously, the information that's on the Internet is something that of value. There are technology programs, out there that do benefit law enforcement. The LPRs, which is the license plate readers, you'll see those on patrol cars. They're an asset in traffic enforcement. They're designed to check the information on registered owners of the vehicles, meaning are the plates valid and are there any stolen vehicles, things like that. We actually have LPRs right up at Eastview Mall. It's a project that was started about 4 years ago, and when you enter the mall, your vehicle is checked by a license plate reader, which indicates, is there any issues with that car? Is it stolen? There could be a possible wanted subject or something like that. That's technology that we use every day in our job.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Are the mall security alerted right away if there's something going on?
Yeah, so what happens is if there's what we call an LPR hit, if a car meets something that vehicle is registered in the system, it's alerting the deputies that are assigned to the mall that there is a vehicle that's entered mall property, and the deputies then can work with the mall security and their CTV, their surveillance cameras, and check on that vehicle to see what the issue is. Again, it could be a stolen vehicle, could be a wanted subject that are going to malls, that are stealing from malls, that they're known subjects of interest. It alerts the deputies to that.
I like modern technology. Good, Armin. Armin Marinetti.
Thank you. I was thinking, is there any plan or is there any current use of drones for similar use?
Well, we do have drones. There's actually two drones. There's three certified drone operators that have been certified through the requirements of the FAA. And the drone program is relatively new, but yes, if needed, the drones could be deployed. Let's use the mall, for example. A few years ago, we had that terrible night with all the traffic issues. That's when the mall had a large amount of folks there shopping towards the tail end of Christmas season, and there was a large issue with traffic. We were called out to go up to help with that issue, and that could be a possible drone use. Put the drone in the air and from a height and try to see how we can realign traffic patterns to get those folks out of the mall a little bit quicker.
You mentioned something about technology. Will we be seeing the sheriffs wearing the on body cameras? Are they going to be funded somehow to get more of those?
Yeah. Right, the body cam. Currently, we do not have the body cam program. I'm sure at some point that will be approached and working with the Board of Supervisors and the Public Safety Committee, as well as the union. Everybody is a voice in this. I feel that the body camera system would be a positive. I would support some type of program for that. The biggest challenge is obviously is cost, as well as funding. There are grant programs that are available for body cameras. Currently, a lot of the surrounding departments, Rochester City Police Department, Brighton Police Department, has the body cams. I believe there are some other towns in Monroe County that are looking at them. And I think body cameras would be a positive step forward, again, for use of technology in law enforcement.
And with the opiate crisis in the community, are there any programs out there for Narcan training? What are your thoughts on that? Not just for the medical professionals as well as law enforcement, but community residents themselves, since it is a crisis going on.
Yes, and great question. We as law enforcement are all trained and carry Narcan or Naloxone. But yes, with the partnership and through Ontario County Public Health, we do have a program that we do go out in different areas of the community and offer the Narcan training and certification. Public health nurses will do the training. It's about an hour in length. And once the person goes through the training, they are then certified to carry the Narcan. And public health will actually give the Narcan kits to those that are getting the training.
Oh, that was my next question.
So, yes, we are making the kits available. Our thought is, obviously, with this epidemic, that we make sure that we do our best to try to help those. And unfortunately, we do have overdoses almost on a daily basis now, unfortunately, where Narcan has been used to help and prevent a death.
So more on yourself, Kevin.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your background, the work you do. I know you're very extensive in not just your RSO duties, but you have a lot of extensive training in other fields.
Well, yeah, just real quick on my background, I'm a third-generation law enforcement officer. My grandfather was a city police officer in Canandaigua, and my dad was a state trooper. My dad was also a World War II veteran and fought in the Pacific Campaign with the Marines. And my mom, ironically, was also a member of the sheriff's office. She worked in the civil division and was a civil secretary, but they carry the title of civil deputy. And my brother, Mark, is currently the chief of police in Brighton. So there's, and then I have other family, uncles and cousins that are also in law enforcement. There's nine of us total that have been serving in law enforcement. In regards to myself, like I said, stated, I started in 1984 as a Marine deputy, which was on the boat patrol. I then transferred into the jail division for about a year, worked as a corrections officer. At the time, that was what we call the old jail, which is 74 Ontario Street, not the new complex out in Hopewell. And then I went on the road patrol and became a road deputy and was able to serve in several different capacities. I was a field training officer. I probably have trained 20 or plus new deputies throughout the course of my career. I also am a community policing officer. I go out to the community, engage in community groups, try to problem solve if they have specific issues or bring information that might be of value to the folks that want to come and listen. Our seniors are unfortunately each and every day are prey to those that want to take their money and take advantage of our seniors. I go out and make sure that they're aware of the current trends that that people are trying to take their money or get them to be a victim. Throughout my career as well, I was a canine officer. I was in the canine unit. I had a narcotics dog, and I enjoyed doing that, and was on a narcotics enforcement team. And then my dog and I would be requested to go out throughout not only Ontario County, but throughout the eastern part of the state to help in other departments. Because back, it was the early 90s, there weren't a lot of canine units. So I would go to state prisons and do prison searches. I would go to other counties and help with traffic stops to locate drugs and vehicles. So I like doing that. And then I became a school resource officer back in 2004, which was under a COPS-funded grant at the time. The federal government was placing full-time deputies in the schools. That's when the program really started to take off. Unfortunately, that was after Columbine, and they saw the need to have police officers in the school. So I did that for about 4.5 years and then retired back to part-time and went back on the boat patrol and worked Eastview Mall as a deputy and now back as a school resource officer.
So, Kevin, speaking of the resource officer for schools and all the recent trouble our country's had, what are your thoughts on... what are your thoughts on, as a resource officer, on what we're doing currently to protect the kids?
Well, again, I think the program, when people feel, well, why do we need police officers in the school? Are things that bad? Well, we're there for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, we're there for safety. We want to provide a level of safety for the students and the staff, as well as the visitors that come and go on the campus every day. But we're also there primarily as mentors. We're there as role models. I go every day when I go into the schools, I go into classrooms and talk about different topics. It could be health topics. It could be legal topics, constitutional amendments we go in and talk about. I encourage the kids to understand their rights. I explain to them in classes what their rights are and how we do things in law enforcement, so they have an understanding of that. But we're also there to hopefully, if we hear a concern, we're there to intervene and to prevent something. Unfortunately, with the recent tragedy down in Parkland, Florida, unfortunately, we learn things after what has happened. After an event has happened, we learn things.
Ongoing learning experience.
It is. How can we do things better? When we're encouraging kids, the program, if you hear something, if you see something, we want you to say something. That's the initiative that we're encouraging the students. We're encouraging staff and even parents. So we're there to also hopefully intercede in something if it should happen or is going to happen. We're there before it does happen. And that's what I think a good part of the program is.
Not only that, but being in a resource officer in schools and everything, and you get those kids that need that extra friend or the extra support, and you're a role model, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, kids will come in, they get to know you. They don't see you as a threat, or meaning, you know, geez, you know, I don't want this. I'm not going to talk to this police officer. They do see you as a role model, and they'll come in, and sometimes they just want to come in because they have a struggle at home or have a concern, or sometimes they'll come in just to want to talk and ask questions, and we encourage those that are actually thinking about law enforcement to talk to us. And I encourage kids every day to think about law enforcement as a career. And there are current deputies that work with us that I had as students, as a resource officer in the Midlake school system at the time when I was there, that are currently deputies. And I was a role model to them. And they'll tell you that they're deputies now because of the impact I had with them during school.
Do so I have time for a question?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. I was... looking at, I'm ignorant about the chain of command with regards to sheriff. Mm-hmm. From time to time, there's a gentleman out of the Chicago area. His name is Sheriff David Clark, who is very outspoken when it comes to politics and current events. As a sheriff, what is your chain of command? Who do you answer to, and how... free are you to speak out?
Well, the sheriff is an elected position. Who do I answer to? I answer to the constituents of the county. Those that live in the county is who I answer to. Obviously, I have to work with the Board of Supervisors within the parameters of the county for funding and staffing and that end, but in regards to the sheriff, I answer to the constituents of the county.
Okay. And the Board of Supervisors, what about on a state level? Is there somebody that oversees you as far as the state government goes?
Again, as the sheriff, and who would I answer to?
Yeah.
In state government? No, again, I'm elected, so I answer to the constituents, and obviously the laws that are enacted in the state, we actually have to follow.
You're gonna remember your three levels of
government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's good. Okay. I'm trying to control the microphones, and we're not working here.
That's okay.
I did have a story to share if you have time. When, as a resource officer, I did witness a bad scene, and I give you gentlemen and women a lot of credit. Working in the city of Rochester one time, we had a situation where a fight broke out right after lunch, and it grew.
Mm-hmm.
And the resource officer was trying to maintain it, and somebody tugged on his weapon. And he had to use mace because the crowd was just getting too big. And we had a lockdown because the, what would you call them, reserves or the help showed up to clear the crowd.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they were there in no time at all, and they diffused the situation. But it was tense.
Right. No, it can be. Again, it can happen anywhere. It can happen at a football game. It can happen walking down Main Street, Canandaigua. So, again, it's that level of respect. It's that level of understanding that the, again, in the school environment, that the kids know that, you know, again, we're police officers. That's what, first and foremost, we're police officers. if you're asked to do something under the order of a police officer that's obviously justifiable, then they understand. And again, I'll be honest with you, the Red Jacket District and the districts as a whole, and at least in our county, we have great school resource officers. Not everybody can be a school resource officer. You have to have a particular demeanor. You have to have the patience. You're dealing with young adolescents, kids, young adults, as well as some kids that have emotional and mental health problems. You have to be able to understand that. And, again, how are you going to approach them and deal with the situation?
Are you a parent?
I am. I have two kids.
Yeah, I would always tell my students the best preparation I had for the job was being a parent.
Being a parent.
Yeah, that's where it starts.
It does. And it does. And again, to kind of finish up with the resource officer program, it's unfortunate, but some of the kids do come from broken homes.
Yep.
That is part of life. And they're just some don't have maybe a father in the household, and they're looking for advice and looking for guidance, and that's what we do. They'll ask questions or how can I do this? And I'll give them the advice, and I enjoy that. I really do.
That's great. So, Kevin, in closing, what would you like us to know about your candidacy?
Well, again, I feel that my qualifications, having worked my entirety here in the sheriff's office, and I'm very also involved in the community. Like I said, I'm with a partnership. Not only do I sit on the Substance Abuse Coalition, I'm also on the Suicide Prevention Coalition, the Nowhere to Go Coalition, which is a coalition of members that are for primarily homeless veterans, as well as homeless folks that are in need of services. I am also a very strong supporter of the Child Advocacy Center, which is a division of within the partnership that helps with.
I have friends.
No, stop! Stop! I screwed up. And seeing I screwed up and I got to cut all that part out, that's not an omnidirectional mic. I figured out why you don't understand it. You have to speak directly into the mic or you get no voice at all.
So,
but I, no, no, whatever. It doesn't matter. All right, let's go back to finishing the interview. All right, start. Just go wherever you want to, Kevin.
Just to finish up, I really feel that my qualifications as such that I would be a very good sheriff. I'm very connected to the community. I love Ontario County. I love my community, and I will be there to support the needs of our community and make sure that I do my very best as the sheriff to not only support the community, but also support those that work for me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And how can people reach you?
I can be reached at, I have a website at hendersonforsheriff.com, if you'd like to go there. I can be reached via Facebook. I have a very active Facebook page, and basically that's Henderson for Sheriff. If you look that up in a search for Facebook, I would like you to join my Facebook page, and you can stay up to date on everything I do every week. It's not just occasionally. I'm out every single day talking with folks and getting them to know me.
That's great. And good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Boy, we're going to have some.
We're still live, but I was going to say,
Clerico, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been up? Welcome, enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs. I, Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge. Fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. The smoking lamp is out.
Old Glory, Stars and Stripes, Red, White, and Blue, the A flag, the American flag, the flag that is flown above every rooftop to guide on, battleships, camps, forts, and fops. The American flag bears the crimson color of blood that has kept our flag as pure as the white bars that flank the blue field of honor. The Military Exchange is proud to present Valley Forge American-made flags. 100% American-made, real issue. We sell flags by the military branch, unit, or division. Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, National Guard, Marine Corps. We sell flag poles, mounts, and display cases. Show your pride. Display your branch proudly with a flag from Valley Forge. The Gadsden, Don't Tread on Me flag and decals. Perfect for the conservative New Yorker. Join the military culture that is the Military Exchange. Located in Canandaigua, New York, check out our weekly video broadcast of our radio show at IronMikesMX.com. Welcome back. This is 1310 Canandaigua, three men and a microphone on WOKR 1310. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton. That over there is our videographer. I don't want that, but that girl is the videographer, and that's MJ Walker. And this young lady is the president and director of Finger Lakes Wildlife Center, Erin Lord Estels.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for being on our show. And you have a non-for-profit, and we're very interested in what it does. I think you said you might you have experience or you've been affiliated with another program we've had on the air, which was the Wildlife Rock Stars.
Yes.
And we had Penny the Kangaroo.
I know Penny well.
So yes. Actually, I put it out there that you actually might bring goats, and my friends went, "We love goats. We want to see goats." But, you know, anytime in the future, if you want to bring, you know, somebody in or whatever, you know, any kind of animal that's in your care that we can put on the air, we'd love to do it.
Absolutely. That's definitely something to keep in mind for the future. At this point.
Oh, I got to put up. As long as it doesn't eat me.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Well, you know, Finger Lakes Wildlife Center, I just want to start off by telling you a little bit about ourselves. Finger Lakes Wildlife Center Incorporated was founded in 2015 by my husband, John, and myself. John specializes in nonprofit accounting at the ARC of Seneca, Cayuga. My background is in wildlife education and wildlife science, and I was also, the bulk of my experience comes from Wolf Mountain Nature Center in Smyrna, New York, as well as the Utica Zoo, where I was a zookeeper and a California sea lion trainer. So I have about, I have experience with about 240 species of different animals.
All of those sound like they might eat me.
Even the only sea lion. A few of them probably would. So what I'm doing now is we are trying to build a wildlife center in Farmington, New York. We're right a few miles north of the thruway, kind of on the border of Farmington and Palmyra. Our goal would be to function as an ecological visitor center for the Finger Lakes region. We would be doing that through environmental education programs for people of all ages. And we would like to exhibit native New York State flora and fauna. So primarily what's in our own backyard. You know, a lot of these other programs have these wonderful exotic animals from all over the world. But what we want to do is teach people what they have in their own backyard, and also the natural history of the region, what we used to have but no longer have, what we have now that we didn't have, for example, the coyotes and opossums. A lot of people don't know that they're not native to the area. Other than the native species exhibits, we also want to do arboretums, and we're looking into building several greenhouses as well. We have about 6 acres of wonderful wetlands with a lot of native species already living there. So we will be working this year to develop our wildlife walking trails so that we can share those wetlands and our resident wild species with everyone else. Another thing that we hope to achieve is we will be expanding our children's zoo or our petting zoo. Some people might be asking, what does that have to do with native New York species? Well, agriculture has such a huge impact on the geography of our region, so we feel it's important to discuss how agriculture has also affected our environment here. So really, we hope to create really attractive facilities as a destination for the public. And we want to provide very unique experiences for the public through natural history interpretation, educational workshops and lectures, and also through participation in citizen science programs, such as Project Feeder Watch or doing sound surveys of our resident frog species.
Wow, that's really cool. And you know what? You said opossum, right?
Yes.
So possum.
The Virginia opossum is different than the South American and Australian possums.
And they're not actually vermins either. They're actually good.
Right, they are, yes. Yeah.
To have around.
So, speaking of the opossum, if I may, the opossum's actually not even native to New York. They are a marsupial. They're the only marsupial that occurs in North America. But they're originally only found in the Southeast. They really weren't even established in New York until somewhere between the 1920s and the 1940s. And the thought behind that is a lot of people were clearing land for agricultural purposes. Eventually, people abandoned agriculture and farming, and natural succession took over and regenerated some younger forests, which provided good habitat for those animals, and they started moving northward and continuing to expand the range. So that's just something interesting. A lot of people see these opossums on the side of the road or in their dumpsters, and they look at them and think they're a gross rat or something, but they actually do have ecological value. You know, they're kind of nature's cleanup crew.
What do they eat?
They basically eat anything. They're scavengers. They'll eat carrion, roadkill. They eat a lot of invertebrates, bugs, grubs, things like of that nature, including ticks that they pick up as they're walking through the forest. And they will eat a lot of vegetation as well. So they're pretty much opportunistic omnivores. They'll eat whatever they can get in their mouth.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They're cool animals.
But yeah, you have other creatures or animals in your care.
Right now,
well, that sounded like a creature more than
right now we don't have we don't have any animals in our collection as ambassadors at this point. We do have the two goats. The reason behind this is because we're putting a lot of effort into upgrading our facilities, and we personally believe in creating large naturalistic enclosures that replicate ecosystems. So we are working to build those as well as fundraise and things of that nature. So this following or this previous weekend, we had a volunteer event. We had about 11 people show up to help out. You know, we totally redid our barn. It looks fantastic now. We did a lot of lot maintenance. We pulled a lot of invasive species. We had quite an issue with invasive Japanese knotweed coming up through the barn and things of that nature. So our goal right now is to rehab the facility and make it an attractive destination for our visitors. And then we will start building more of the wildlife enclosures. So I just want to drive home the point that we are not currently open to the public. We hope we're actually in the stage of planning some volunteer events as well as some fundraising events for 2019, where we would be inviting the public in to help us build the place.
That's so true. The wetlands that you're building around, they're all protected then?
They are, I believe, Class 3 DEC wetland.
Okay.
Though we do hope to develop the facility quite a bit, we don't want to exclude our native wildlife. We have a lot of waterfowl that pass through as they're migrating, and we seem to be a fairly important stopover for them. So we don't want to exclude them from being able to come in and use that habitat as well. So the wetlands will not be developed, but we do want to build a nice walking trail so that people can...
Now,
do you keep an eye on what, I don't want to say what visits, what animals come around and fowl through using the camera traps?
Yes. So I haven't used them recently, but we did set camera traps last summer, just to sort of do a survey of what we have. And
any muskrats at all?
I have not seen muskrats. No, I have seen mink. Nice. We have coyote, fox, lots and lots of deer, an assortment of waterfowl, and like we have a very large pond where we get herons and things of that nature.
It sounds like a beautiful place.
It is an extremely beautiful property. The previous owner had a horse boarding facility there, so it needs a fair amount of work. But we're working hard to make it beautiful and enjoyable for people coming in.
Is there a predatory animal that you want to keep out, that you watch for?
So right now, because I have the goats, they're Nigerian dwarf goats. They're quite small. I do have concerns regarding their safety as far as coyotes. We do have coyotes on the property. So they spend the nights in a large pole barn. We have a huge pole barn with 15 stalls in it, and they have a double wide stall in there. So we keep them protected from predators.
No scaredy cat goats?
No, scaredy cat goats, no fainting goats. They're quite sociable.
There's a campground near here where they have what I call scaredy cat goats. And I don't know. Part of me's sad to see them freeze like they do and fall over, but part of me also finds that a little bit hilarious.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if it's healthy for the goats or not, but there's that goat, right, that you just go boo and it falls over.
Yeah. It sort of makes you wonder how those animals survived this long, if that's their adaptation, you know, but they
that's
must,
a good point. Yeah.
They must have some other means of avoiding predation.
Well, coyotes aren't known for going boo.
No.
So
even possums play dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it works for them.
Like,
but they also emit a very foul odor that makes them smell like rotting meat. So
possums do?
That sort of helps deter a lot of animals as well.
So how do we get funding for your group and you know, you have events going on, or
we are in the process of planning some events. Probably the best way for people to learn how they can help us out, you can go to our website, FingerLakesWildlifeCenter.org, and there is a page called Get Involved. It has our project list and links on how people can make donations. You can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook for updates on our public events that will be coming up.
Very nice. Very nice. Good group. Aaron, we're glad to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully it can help push the cause. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. I would just ask that the listeners, if they have any questions, feel free to email me at fingerlakeswildlifecenter@yahoo.com, or you can get on Facebook and send me private messages. Pardon me. Sorry. yes, you can send me private messages on Facebook. You can email me if you have any questions or if you have any desire to help us out in any way.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. It was nice seeing you again.
You too.
Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage boxers and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's, the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation in the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia, uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage, clothing,
outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpacks, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York.
Peace is the result of retraining your mind to process life as it is, rather than as you think it should be. Please leave your expectations at the door. This Life's Moment is brought to you by Woody's Cafe, 2375 Route 332 in Canandaigua, New York. Breakfast and lunch cafe, cooking soulful food using local and compostable products whenever possible. Local, seasonable, sustainable, simple. Woody's Cafe.
Old Glory, Stars and Stripes, Red, White, and Blue, the A flag, the American flag, the flag that has flown above every rooftop to guide on, battleships, camps, forts, and FOBs. The American flag bears the crimson color of blood that has kept our flag as pure as the white bars that flank the blue field of honor. The Military Exchange is proud to present Valley Forge American-made flags. 100% American-made, real issue. We sell flags by the military branch, unit, or division. Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, National Guard, Marine Corps. We sell flag poles, mounts, and display cases. Show your pride. Display your branch proudly with a flag from Valley Forge. The Gadsden, Don't Tread on Me flag and decals. Perfect for the conservative New Yorker. Join the military culture that is the Military Exchange. Located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out our weekly video broadcast of our radio show at IronMikesMX.com.
Welcome back to Civil War Radio, Three Men and a Microphone. This is Corporal Tim Thornton, and speaking on behalf of SCOPE, Shooters Committee on Political Education. No story greater fits this than the article that Don Smith sent me to read to you. Assembly Bill A-10428, summary, establishes that public schools shall prohibit marksmanship and or shooting programs. Here is the link to the Assembly's website for people to vote their stance, along with the bill in its entirety. And it would be New York, let me rephrase that, nysenate.gov/legislation/bills/2017/A10428. But A110428 is at present a one-house bill with no co-sponsors. That's the good news. Now for the bad news. The bill to watch is Alpha 10011/S, as in Sierra, 7874, which each have some co-sponsors. This bill, intended to prevent the arming of teachers, strips school administrators of the authority to allow any firearms on school grounds for any purpose. This covers all educational facilities, including colleges and universities. Note the following draft memorandum. Memorandum in opposition. Bill number A10011, Mayor, same as S7874, Kaminsky. Title, limits educational institutions' ability to authorize the possession of a weapon on school grounds to certain officers or agents of a law enforcement agency. This legislation would mandate that no educational institution issue written authorization to possess a firearm, rifle, or shotgun to any person who is not primarily employed as a school resource officer, law enforcement officer, or security guard. Justification. The stated purpose of this bill is to prevent educational institutions from authorizing the possession of firearms by any staff member or any other person who is not employed as a security officer for the purpose of providing security. The proposal would, however, override the authority of the institution to permit the possession of firearms in or upon the buildings or grounds of the institution for educational or recreational purposes. Among the activities that would be prohibited, educational use for historical purposes or technical education, competitive and recreational shooting programs, hunter safety training classes, inclusion in museum collections, veterans, color guards, and salutes. This legislation is unnecessary. Under existing statutes, the administration of each institution has the authority to control the possession and use of firearms on its grounds, and there is no evidence that this authority is not adequate for maintaining staff and student safety, nor is there any evidence of abuse that would warrant new legislation. I am sure there are other activities that would be precluded. That was the message from our scope representative, Mr. Don Smith. As Corporal Tim Thornton, I completely concur with Don, but I want you to look into the future and think to yourself, 20 years from now, a grown man who knows nothing about personal protection, nothing about marksmanship, nothing about the sportsmanship that comes along with archery, target shooting, or the ability to never have seen or known the protection that a weapon carries. The ability to keep everyone safe, except for that one person that the government said, you are the only one. Other schools are handing out little tiny mini baseball bats. And they want our kids to run and hide in a closet. They want to build formidable closets for them to hide in. I don't disagree. I really don't have a problem with a blackjack. That's kind of what you're giving our kids to learn. But I don't know what you're trying to teach them. You're not teaching them to defend themselves on one hand, and on the other hand, you're giving them a very inferior weapon. You're not giving them authority over their own lives, and or the teachers, the staff. It's coming down to only the government representative can protect them. I want to go on record as saying I am a huge fan, a huge supporter of our RSOs, our resource officers. They're standing in the line between the killer and our children. But 20 years from now, that child, unless he grows up in a hunting household, and who's to say that that will last, he's not being taught how to defend himself, nor how to understand weaponry. Back in the day, when I went to school, when my dad went to school, we brought our rifles in to show for show and tell to the classroom. There was targets. There was archery. There was the track team, or, you know, where you shot the discus or the spear or things. We did things that mattered, that helped us understand our own manhood. I don't know what you're leaving our kids with in the future as you whittle away at their freedoms. I would question that. I would question this bill. I would contact my senator, my congressman. I would tell him, I don't want this. Now, I know we lead in the New York Senate as Republicans. That didn't help us with the SAFE Act. So don't snooze and don't think that this can't become a law. Corporal Tim Thornton, as always, I hope you enjoy your weekend. Get out, do some target practice, throw a ball, do something before lawn darts are taken away. Oh, they already are. Who knew?
Them doggies rolling rawhide through rain and wind and weather, hell bent for leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love and kissing, I waited at the end of my ride. Move him out, hit him up there, out, hit him up real high. Turn out, ride him in, cut him out, cut him out. Ride him in, roll high. Ha! Ha! Keep moving, moving, moving. Though they're disapproving. Keep them doggies moving rawhide. Don't try to understand them. Just rope and throw and brand them. Soon we'll be living high and wide. My heart's calculating, my true love will be waiting, waiting at the end of my ride. Move him out, hit him up, hit him up, move him out, hit him up, roll high. Cut him out, ride him in, cut him out, ride him in, roll
Mike's Military Exchange is tactical.
The Military Exchange in Canandaigua is your best one-stop shopping for all your tactical needs. At Iron Mike's, every piece of tactical gear is hand-picked. Everything is field-tested by their military personnel, overseas contractors, field operators, special ops, and law enforcement. Iron Mike's has the best quality gear, USGI, that's government issue, 600 to 1,000 denier nylon, assault vest, plate carriers, helmets, mag pouches, slings, 1, 2, and 3-point bungee slings, holsters, rifle cases, sniper's drag bags, ghillie suits, woodland, desert and snow, three-day assault packs, medium transport pack, a wide variety of colors and manufacturers to choose from. This week's special, two multi-cam combat shirts, real issue and battle-tested. Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York. Check them out online at ironmikes.co.
Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for three men and a microphone and a lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone. Presented each week, Saturday 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310.
Bug out bag, backpack, whistle, compass, match case, waterproof matches, headlamp, survival blanket, toilet bag, fuel, cook stove, water, poncho, canteen cup, tissue, toilet paper, and four main meals, deck of cards, only $59.99. At the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York, IronMikesMX.com.
Springtime weather forecast. Rainy, gray skies with a slight chill in the a.m. Tactical to practical. Military rain gear on sale now at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Camouflage rubber rain pants, USGI issue, only
$19.99. The Military Exchange.